Chapter 37. Bree. Waking up from immersion was like coming out of anesthesia in the recovery room after her emergency appendectomy when she was 13. She managed to blink her eyes open, groggy, but it looked like she was underwater, and the pale blue light filtering through just made her want to go back to sleep. She breathed slowly in and out and reached up to rub her eyes. Her arms moved oddly, sliding through goop like barely thickened gelatin. Something in her hindbrain finally clicked, and Bree sat up abruptly. Her head emerged from the blue ooze, and she began to cough violently, expelling the oxygen-enriched fluid from her lungs with extreme prejudice. She had been through this a few times before while she was in training for her long submersion, but it was always the most unpleasant part of the whole experience. Or it was until the top of her pod opened, and a face that she didn't recognize peered in at her, followed by the black barrel of what she took far too long to recognize as a gun. She had the barest glimpse of the young man holding the weapon, and only got an impression of very pale skin and hair and very dark eyes. "Good, you're finally awake," the man said, twitching the barrel of the gun in her direction. "Get up. It's about time to get this party started." He snickered and backed up, though he kept the gun trained on her as she slowly climbed from the pod. She had been told that her muscles would be kept in shape through direct stimulation, but she was still vaguely surprised to find that even after several months of disuse, her arms only trembled from fear and not weakness. There was some discomfort as the tubes attached to her suit to take care of her physical needs pulled free, but it was distant, as if her nerves were muffled in cotton. "What? What's going on?" she managed. Her voice still sounded strange to her. Not Aspen's smooth baritone, but her own husky contralto. "Who are you? Where's Joe and—" The stranger sneered at her. "No more questions. Just shut up and go through that door." He nodded to the flat, metallic door through which she'd entered. "How long ago?" She crossed the floor on unsteady feet, the thin slime almost making her slip more than once. Slowly, she touched the plate beside the door, and it slid aside silently. She entered a room that had been empty when she last saw it, but now held what looked like a partially deconstructed version of the pod in which she'd just awoken. "Shower. Quickly." Cold black eyes flickered to the built-in chemical rinse shower she'd used each time she'd practiced with her pod, and she mechanically moved to obey. The fog in her brain was beginning to clear, and as the warm water sluiced away the remnants of the liquid medium in which she'd been lying, the situation finally started to sink in. From outside the protective wall of water, a tenor voice said, "Strip. There's a set of scrubs for you out here." Slowly, she peeled off the bodysuit, detaching the remaining leads and electrodes in the process. She winced but reminded herself she'd been through childbirth. She hadn't been body conscious in decades, though adding the vulnerability of nudity to this scenario made her skin crawl. "Hurry up. The stuff is designed to break down in water. You should be done." A sharp note of warning worked its way into the young man's voice, and she touched the control panel to shut off the water. Quickly, she grabbed at the towel hanging beside the shower and wrapped it around her body. "Where are my clothes?" she demanded, looking straight into his dark eyes, her chin lifted in a gesture anyone who knew her would have recognized as a warning sign. He tilted his head, and she saw a set of pale blue scrubs thrown haphazardly across the open-sided immersion pod. Urged on by fear and anger, she was across the space before she even fully decided to move, and she staggered as she barely avoided crashing into the pod. What was going on? Laughing harshly, the young man motioned toward the scrubs. "Don't worry about that. You won't have time to enjoy it. Just put the clothes on." Bree pulled the pants up under the towel, then tugged the shirt on and in a single motion snapped the towel out, faster than she'd ever moved before, aiming at the dark barrel pointing at her face. Even as she released the corner of cloth she'd been gripping, she dropped and spun, one leg out to sweep the stranger's feet out from under him. Impossibly fast, he jumped up and back, still holding the weapon in a rock-steady grip. He landed on his toes in perfect balance, one hand out to counter his shift in weight. "Bitch," he said conversationally. "Try that again, and I'll just shoot you now, and worry about how it looks later. You're only incidental, after all." Bree gritted her teeth. How had he moved so quickly? For that matter, how had she moved so quickly? Her self-defense trainer had always chided her about needing to practice more to bring up her speed, but she was certain that the move she'd just completed was faster and more precise than any she'd ever done before, in spite of months of inactivity. Or maybe because of it. Bridget had had one of those mouse-with-cheese grins when she'd assured Bree that she wouldn't need physical therapy or support after coming out of immersion. Bree came effortlessly to her feet, her muscles moving smooth and easy. Glancing down, she saw that instead of the familiar softness of her forearms, she had lean muscle. For a moment, she had a desperate urge to feel her stomach and see if the little cesarean pooch was finally gone, but a glimpse of the unwavering black tunnel of the gun barrel drove that thought from her mind. "Go," the stranger said, motioning toward the door in the far wall. "I've prepared a little reunion for you." Bree's eyes widened, and her breath left her body. Oh, please God, let him not mean Bridget. She practically ran across the room and tapped the door panel. The screen above it was flashing red, with the message malfunction scrolling constantly. It hissed open, and Bree looked into the vaguely familiar lab beyond. Three people were on the floor, bound. The first one she saw was a tall, broad black man, his face set in a fierce scowl and his hazelnut eyes fixed on the door. When it slid open, he grunted and propelled himself forward with a burst of strength from his powerful legs. She saw the moment he realized she was standing there instead of their abductor, and he twisted in mid-motion, crashing hard against a rolling table filled with instruments and sending him, the table, and its contents tumbling to the ground. Chilling laughter came from behind her, and something cold and hard pressed against the back of her skull. "Omot, you're just as protective in real life as in the game, and just as bad at it, aren't you? Did you really think I'd risk coming in first? Plus, I'm controlling the security system right now, so the cameras in here showed me what you were up to anyway." With a painful shove of the gun barrel against her skull, the man shoved Bree forward, and she stumbled forward three deliberate steps, putting her next to the prostrate form of the most precious person in the world. Bridget. Bree whirled, putting her body between the madman and her daughter, though another part of her desperately wanted to check on Mott, who hadn't yet stirred or made a sound. The man grinned, and something in his eyes finally triggered recognition. "Phantom hat?" His face lit up with glee. "That's right. It's about time one of you idiots figured it out." Bree shook her head, feeling her damp red curls swaying into the frizzy mass they always dried into without product and work. "But this is real, isn't it?" She stared around, suddenly both terrified and hopeful that she was still in the pod. Still dreaming. "Oh, this is as real as it gets, Ms. Bree Stevenson, social media star. You're about to become the stepping stone I need to achieve the fame and fortune I deserve. The fortune that my selfish ass of a grandfather denied me just because I was illegitimate. A bastard. Just like your sweet little girl there. But who cares now, anyway? Nobody except antiquated old men, that's who." Phantom Hat's voice rose throughout this little exposition, and by the end, his black eyes were burning and he was waving the gun wildly. As soon as Bree's muscles tensed, however, the weapon instantly honed back in on her, and he shook his head chidingly. Now, don't move. There were only two doses of sedative in the lab, so Bridget and smart, handsome, perfect Hank got them. After all, if Mott's going to kill you all, he can't have any drugs in his system, and you, well, he shrugged, I only need you because you're famous and you dying will draw the media vultures. Otherwise, I would have just let you wake up to find these three already dead. He saw the look of horror on her face and laughed. Boo-hoo, poor Bree. Maybe that would have been best, after all. You're not as pretty in person, but watching someone break is always great fun, so I'm sure the news would still have been filled with pictures of your sobbing face. Oh well, too late now. She backed up a little more, feeling her rear bump into Bridget's unconscious form. Only unconscious. There's no blood, and he said she's alive. Oh God, please. What? She said, voice cracking desperately. What's the point of all this? Bridget said once we beat the quest, that was it. No matter what you do, you've still lost. Talk to me, you megalomaniac. Come on, just keep talking. If you're talking, you're not shooting. He shook his head. That's where you're wrong. He held up his free hand, fingers splayed. There were five people in this little deal. Amy, Bridget, Joe, Hank, and Carl. He lowered one finger with each name. With Amy dead, he saw her flinch and grinned viciously. Oh, that's right, you didn't know. Well, that one was an accident, but it was what finally helped me realize that all I needed to do was clear the field. No more competitors means no more competition, right? After tonight, the only ones left will be Joe and Carl, and they both want to sell the tech to the highest bidder. Well, Joe was getting a little wishy-washy, but once Amy and Bridget are gone, he won't have any more little voice of conscience to bother him. Slowly he stepped to the side, attempting to get a clear view of the prone forms behind Bree. She shifted, blocking him, and he scowled, then laughed. Do whatever you want. It won't change anything. He paused with his back to the office door and continued with his story. You know, Georgie and I just wanted to talk to Amy. Honestly, it wasn't my fault that the car slid and hit her. It was icy that night, you know? But then she was out of the picture, and with Hank in the game, suddenly poor old Carl had no children left. No one to share his grief. But there I was. He laughed. Grandson of his best friend, and the boy who grew up with his own children. I knew all the stories, and we just started talking. Well, he grimaced, he talked, and I listened to his idiotic rambling about how he never knew what he had until it was gone. I was the one who convinced him to pull Amy from the hospital and take her home before Bridget managed to try out her coma protocols on her. Who knows, it might have worked. It's just too bad that Amy never woke up, right? Phantom Hat started pacing, though the gun never drifted far from his victims. So when that impudent little brat got me killed in game, I knew I could win anyway. I just had to remove all the pieces, just like Amy, and leave only the king on the board. He looked toward where Mott lay, still motionless. That idiot made it too easy. He's been spending all his spare time with Bridget, and he has a long history of sticking up for you whenever someone called you an overhyped idiot with a nice rack. He really should have kept his social media a little more private. Too late now, though. He shrugged. I figure the story goes like this, he pointed at Mott. Good old Mott has worshipped the famous fabulous Bree Stevenson for years. When he met her daughter, the finger shifted to Bridget, he figured she was close enough. They start a May to December romance while she's bouncing back from being rejected by the eminently eligible Harkness Landon. Then when Hank wakes up ready to rekindle their love affair, Mott snaps, kills them both along with you because really, he shrugged, why not? Then he commits suicide in a fit of remorse. What do you think? From the corner of her eye, Bree saw Mott's foot twitch and dared to hope that he was conscious and listening to the crazy man expound. Her hands were still free. If she could reach Mott, maybe she could get him loose, and then they could take down Phantom Hat or whatever his real name was. Who are you anyway? She asked, drawing on years of smiling and flattering powerful interview subjects who she secretly disliked. I can't just keep calling you Phantom Hat. You're obviously much more important than a mere lackey in real life. He snorted, but a faint pleased flush rose on his pale cheeks. Don't suck up to me. It doesn't matter what you call me, since you're going to be dead in a minute anyway. I just have to get the timing right. After all, when the shots go off, I won't have long to get out of here, though it'll be easy enough to slip out through Veralt's lab. I just have to make sure that the coroner's report shows you all died in the right order, so, who's first? The gun wavered between Bridget, whose head and chest were behind Bree, and Harkness, who was half hidden by the desk. Phantom Hat made a face. Why couldn't they collapse in a more convenient way? Fine. Bridget first, I think, but we'll wait until Hank starts to come out of it. I'll let him get a couple of swings in. That way it'll look like he was trying to fight Mott off when Mott shot him. Then you, when you came in and saw what was going on. Then of course, I have to get Mott's hand on the gun so the residue will show that he fired the weapon. He looked stymied for a moment, and then his expression brightened. Oh. I can just shoot him somewhere that's not fatal, then put the gun in his hand once he's weak and use his own hand to shoot him in the face. I've been wanting to shoot that mouth off for a while now anyway. He laughed to himself, looking very pleased with his plan. Now Bree, it isn't really that important when you die. Move out of the way and you die third. Stay there and die first. Phantom Hat shrugged. I honestly don't care. A sharp knock came on the lab door behind them. Dr. Anderson? Someone called and asked me to check on you and Dr. Williams. Could you open the door, please? Phantom Hat froze, dark eyes wild. With quick, light steps, he ran over and pressed the gun barrel hard against Bree's forehead. "Tell him everything's fine," he hissed. "Now, or I kill you all, and still get away through the back before he can break in here." He dropped the barrel to point at the side of Bridget's head. Starting with her. Bree shook, unable to see anything but the deadly weapon aimed at her daughter's skull. She cleared her throat, though her voice was rough and shaking when she said, "Yes? Everything's fine. Dr. Williams and I are just indisposed." Phantom Hat snickered. "Indisposed. I like that." He raised his own voice, deepening it as much as possible. "Oh yeah, that's right. We're busy, you know what I mean?" A long silence followed, and the man on the other side of the door sounded embarrassed when he said, "Sorry to bother you then. I'll let them know you're fine." Footsteps retreated down the hall, and when they faded completely, Phantom Hat looked back at Bree and grinned. Now where were we?